Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. So reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, this is Canto 6, Chapter 11, Verse number 19. Suresha Kasman Na Hinosi Vajram Pura Stite Varini Mai Amogham Ma samsayishta na kadeva vajra shan nishvala kripanarteva yachna suresha kasman na hihosni vajram Purastite virini maya amogham Masam sayishta nagandeva vajra Shanishvala kripanarte vayachna Suresha kasmana hinoshi vajram Purastiti varini maya amogham Masam sayishta nagadeva vajra Shanisvala kripanarte vayachna Suresha kasmana hino sivadram Purastiti varini maya amogham Masam sayishta nagadeva vajra Shanisvala kripanarte vayachna Matajis.
Suresha
Anyone else? Okay. Sura Isa, O King of the Demigods, Kasmat, why? Na, not. Hinosi, you hurl. Vajram, the thunderbolt. Purastite, standing in front. Varini, your enemy. Mai, at me. Amogham, which is infallible, your thunderbolt. Ma, do not. Samsayishta, doubt. Na, not. Gadaiva, like the club. Vajra, the thunderbolt. Shat, maybe. Nisfala, with no result. Kripana, from a miserly person. Arta, for money. Eva, like. Yachna, a request. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. O King of the Demigods, since I, your enemy, am standing before you, why don't you hurl your thunderbolt at me? Although your attack upon me with your club was certainly useless, like a request of money from a miser, the thunderbolt you carry will not be useless. You need have no doubts about this. Please repeat. O King of the Demigods, since I, your enemy, am standing before you, why don't you hurl your thunderbolt at me? Although your attack upon me with your club was certainly useless, like a request of money from a miser, the thunderbolt you carry will not be useless. You need have no doubts about this. Purport. When King Indra threw his club at Vritrasura, Vritrasura caught it in his left hand and retaliated by using it to strike the head of Indra's elephant. Thus, Indra's attack was a disastrous failure. Indeed, Indra's elephant was injured and thrown back 14 yards. Therefore, even though Indra stood with the thunderbolt to hurl against Vritrasura, he was doubtful, thinking that the thunderbolt might also fail. Vritrasura, however, being a Vaishnava, assured Indra that the thunderbolt would not fail. For Vritrasura knew that it had been prepared in accordance with the instructions of Lord Vishnu. Although Indra had doubts because he could not understand that Lord Vishnu's order never fails, Vritrasura understood Lord Vishnu's purpose. Vritrasura was eager to be killed by the thunderbolt manufactured according to Lord Vishnu's instructions because he was sure that he would return, or he would thus return home back to Godhead. He was simply waiting for the opportunity of the thunderbolts being released. In effect, therefore, Vritrasura told Indra, if you want to kill me, since I am your enemy, take this opportunity, kill me. You will gain victory, and I shall go back to Godhead. Your deed will be equally beneficial for both of us. Do it immediately. Jai. So the verse again. O King of the Demigods, since I am your enemy, I am standing before you. Why don't you hurl your thunderbolt at me? Although your attack upon me with your club was certainly useless, like a request of money from a miser, the thunderbolt you carry will not be useless. You need have no doubts about this. Om Gyana Tenmandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshus Unmanitam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Nama Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayamupakadamayam Dadanti Swat Padanti Kam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Parakamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Yatam Tam Sajivam Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vanchakopa Tubhyascha, Kripasindubhyascha. Patitanam Pavanebhyo, Vaishnavebhyo, Namo Namaha. Jai. So here we see this great endeavor by the King of Heaven, Lord Indra. And there's also an endeavor here by this great demon, Vritrasura. And they both have their desires. We see that King Indra, he's very much eager to become happy and gain his heavenly happiness again. But on the other hand, we have this supposedly great demon, but he has a body of a demon, but he has a mind of a devotee. And therefore, he's eager to finish off this battle and be killed because he knows that Lord Vishnu's order will not be come in vain, because he knows he'll go back home, back to Godhead. So we can understand that this Indra is very, very eager for his material desires, actually, to become happy. But we'll find out as the story unfolds that after this battle, everyone is happy. The demigods are really joyous and happy because this great demon is killed. Everyone except Indra. He's not actually happy. So his endeavors will not prove to be happiness for him, as we'll see. Because, you know, he realized that this is a great devotee. I've already killed a brahmana. You know, Vishwakarma. Is that, that's who the previous person he killed? Visvarupa. Visvarupa. So he killed him already, and he was favored by women and trees and things like that, and he was able to, you know, counteract the sinful reaction. But now this another great brahmana, Vritrasura, and if he kills him, how is he going to get free from that sinful reaction? So that's why he was very unhappy. He was wondering about this. Even though the demigods have encouraged him to please do this for us, he first refused, but then he actually did it. He actually did kill this great demon. And after he killed him, he realized, he went back to Godhead, and this was a great devotee. So now he was very much, you know, unhappy, actually. So there's an, as this story unfolds, the Suta Goswami is being requested, how is it that this great demon was such a devotee? He was causing misery to everybody, you know, causing so much pain and the mode of ignorance and passion. How is it that this person could become so elevated like this? So then they narrate the story of this great king, Chitraketu, and talks about the sages there. And there was this great sage that came to see this great king, and he was telling him, what is happiness? And this is what we can see is described here by this great sage, Angira. He is saying, when the seven properties of material nature, the total material energy, the ego, the five objects of sense gratification, are in proper order, the living entity within the material elements is happy. So this is how this sage is addressing the king. He's wondering, are you happy? And is explaining to him that, what is happiness? That when we see that our ego, you know, the material energy and the five objects of sense gratification are in order, we're happy. And then he says, without these seven elements, one cannot even exist. And similarly, a king is always protected by seven elements. His instructor, usually the kings, they have a swami or a guru. His ministers, his kingdom, his fort, his treasury, and his royal order, and his friends. So these are the how the king is always protected by these things. And Prabhupada explains into the purport of this particular verse that a king is not alone. You know, when he comes, he always has his entourage, he has his spiritual master, his guide, his ministers. All these things are there, you know, his friends and allies. And if these are properly maintained, then the king is happy. You see. So Prabhupada explains how similar in the Bhagavad Gita, you know, there's that verse, Dehino Smin Yata Dehe, Bhagavad Gita 2.13, that the living entity, the soul, within the material covering of the Mahatattva, the ego, the Pancha Tan Mantra, the five objects of sense gratification, when these seven things are in order, then the living entity is in a mood of pleasure. So, how generally the associates of the king, when they're quiet and they're obedient, the king can become happy. And therefore this sage is inquiring, you know, is everything okay? Your personal health, your good associates, your seven associates, are they all, is everything in order? Like that. And he goes on to explain, he says, O king, O lord of humanity, when a king directly depends upon his associates and follows their instructions, he is happy. Similarly, when his associates offer their gifts and activities to the king and follow his orders, they are also happy. So here, the happiness of a king depends on not only him just giving orders and, you know, his, because he's supreme, but sometimes he has to follow their orders. And similarly, dependents, they depend on the king. And with mutual obedience and dependence on each other, they make everyone happy. So this is happiness in the mature world. This is how it's described. But if we go to the Uddhava Gita in the 11th canto, let's listen to what Uddhava says here about happiness. O Almighty Lord, please be merciful and uplift this hopeless living entity who has fallen into the dark hole of material existence where the snake of time has bitten him. In spite of such abominable conditions, this poor living entity has tremendous desire to relish the most insignificant material happiness. Please save me, my Lord, by pouring down the nectar of your instructions, which awaken one to spiritual freedom. So in this particular verse, there's a word, it's called Chudra Sukhoda Tarsham, which reveals the irony of material existence. That although material happiness is Chudra, or ridiculous, or insignificant, our desire to enjoy it is Uru, it's tremendous. And this is Lord Indra. Just see the tremendous endeavor he went through. He killed his own spiritual master, you know, after he's given him his wealth and everything back, you know, and he's going through this great battle with this huge demon. Uru, it's tremendous. Even though he's striving for something so ridiculous and insignificant. So this is the what Uddhava is praying, how it's so, the most insignificant material happiness is there, but yet we have a tremendous desire to relish it. So this is our disproportionate hankering to enjoy dead matter is certainly an illusory state of mind. And it gives us constant distress, keeping us bound up in this dark hole of material existence. This is what Uddhava is talking about. So there's another verse from the seventh canto about this material world. This material world is miserable, regardless of one's standard of life. Of this, there is no doubt. Attempts to mitigate the miseries of material existence by material methods will never be successful. One must take to Krishna consciousness to become really happy. Otherwise, happiness is impossible. One might say that by becoming advanced in spiritual life also involves tapasya, voluntary acceptance of some inconvenience. However, such inconvenience is not as dangerous as material attempts to mitigate all miseries. And what a graphic example of the dangers of material attempts. Here we're seeing the story of Indra and so many other stories like that in the Bhagavatam. And then there's a verse here from the fourth canto. It talks about the root cause of happiness and distress. And this is a very interesting point that we should understand. So although the root of distress and happiness is, anybody know? The root cause of all distress and happiness. Here. A little more subtler than that. Well, the gunas are subtle, but I mean something. Yes, who said the mind? Somebody said the mind. Oh, Shastrakrit. Yes, it is the mind. So although the root of distress and happiness is the mind, intelligence, and the ego, so these three things, a gross body is still required as an instrument for enjoyment. The gross body may change, but the subtle body continues to act. So Prabhupada explains in this particular verse that the conclusion is that the subtle body, mind, intelligence, and ego, it creates an atmosphere with desires and ambitions for the living entity to enjoy in the subtle body. So actually the living entity is situated in the subtle body, even though the gross body apparently changes, you know, then he inhabits different gross bodies on various planets or wherever. But actually the living entity lives in the subtle body. All the activities performed by the living entity in the subtle body are called illusory because they are not permanent. Liberation means getting out of the clutches of the subtle body. Liberation from the gross body simply involves the transmigration of the soul from one gross body to another. So we see it's that soul that lives in the subtle body, and that subtle body is taking us to different gross bodies. And that gross body is like an instrument to fulfill the mind, intelligence, and ego's happiness, when, you know, its illusion of happiness. So Prabhupada writes, the change of the gross body is not very important, but the change of the subtle body is important. The Krishna consciousness movement is educating people to enlighten the subtle body. The perfect example in this regard is Ambarish Maharaj, who always engaged his mind on the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. Savai mana Krishna padaravindayo. Similarly, in this life, we should always fix our mind on the lotus feet of Krishna, who is present in his Archa Vigraha, the incarnation of the deity in the temple. We should also always engage in his worship. If we engage our speech in describing the activities of the Lord, and our ears in hearing about his pastimes, and if we follow the regulated principles to keep the mind intact for advancing in Krishna consciousness, we shall certainly be elevated to the spiritual platform. So here we're getting so many secrets and clues on how to conquer this mind, how to keep it intact by following certain spiritual activities. Then at the time of death, the mind, intelligence, and ego will no longer be materially contaminated. The living entity is present, and the mind, intelligence, and ego are also present. When the mind, intelligence, and ego are purified, all the activities of the senses of the living entity become spiritual. Thus, the living entity attains his Sat-Chit-Ananda form. The Supreme Lord is always in his Sat-Chit-Ananda form, but the living entity, although part and parcel of the Lord, becomes materially contaminated when he desires to come to the material world for material enjoyment. The prescription for returning home back to Godhead is given by the Lord himself in the Bhagavad Gita 9:34. Anybody know that verse? 9:34. Manmana bhava madbhakto madhyajimam namaskuru mame vaisya se yuktvayavam atmana mat paryanaha. Always think of me and become my devotee. Worship me and offer your homage unto me. Being completely absorbed in me, surely you will come to me. So Indra actually, after he had fled from his sinful reactions, he was trying to find shelter. You know, actually sin personified was following him. And she looked like a witch, very ugly and old, and blood coming from her mouth. And she was chasing him everywhere. He couldn't find any other shelter but the Manasa lake. And he took shelter inside the stem of a lotus flower. And there he stayed. And he couldn't be touched by sinful reactions because that's Lakshmi's lake there. So eventually he came out and he took shelter of the lotus feet of Vishnu. And eventually he was freed from his sinful reactions. So there he actually took shelter of Krishna too and became absorbed in Krishna. So it's described in the eighth canto that one should be satisfied with whatever he achieves by his previous destiny, for discontent can never bring happiness. A person who is not self-controlled will not be happy, even with possessing the three worlds. So this is from Prahlad Maharaj, actually. And he says that if, this is described in the purport, that if happiness is the ultimate goal of life, one must be satisfied with the position in which he is placed by providence. And this is given by Prahlad Maharaj. My dear friends, born of demoniac families, the happiness perceived within reference to the sense objects by contact with the body can be obtained in any form of life according to one's past fruitive activities. Such happiness automatically obtained without endeavor, just as we obtain distress. So real happiness is described in the Bhagavad Gita. And that's the verse 621. I'm sure someone knows that verse. Right? Six. Exactly, yeah. Sukham atyantikam yad dat tad buddhigrayam atindriyam veti yatra na chayayam stitis chalati tatvataha. In that spiritually joyous state, one is situated in boundless transcendental happiness and enjoys himself through transcendental senses. Established thus, one never departs from the truth. So Prabhupada had described how we have to perceive happiness by the super senses. You see, the super senses are not material elements. They're actually spiritual. So every one of us is a spiritual being, aham brahmasmi, and everyone is an individual person. But the real senses are within the material covering. Okay, so now some more about material happiness, how it's described here. This is in the sixth canto, 12th verse coming up. 12th chapter, I mean. Any material happiness is like water in a ditch, whereas the spiritual happiness eternally enjoyed in the spiritual world is like an ocean of nectar in which a devotee wants to swim. This is actually quoted by who, guess? This is the demon, Ritrasura, is actually preaching. Right in the battlefield, they're having a philosophical discussion. They're discussing devotional service and, you know, like that. And actually to the point where Indra actually, you know, glorifies Vitrasura for his great Krishna consciousness and helping him become enlightened, actually. So Prabhupada writes here in the purport, the members of the assembly addressed the Lord. This is actually the verse, another verse. This is a different verse, I'm sorry. This is from the fourth canto. But we'll get back to that. O exclusive shelter for all who are situated in troubled life, in this formidable fort of conditional existence, the time element, like a snake, is always looking for an opportunity to strike. This world is full of ditches of so-called distress and happiness. And there are many ferocious animals always ready to attack. The fire of lamentation is always blazing. And the mirage of false happiness is always alluring. But one has no shelter from them. Thus, foolish persons live in the cycle of birth and death, always overburdened in discharging their so-called duties. And we do not know when they will accept the shelter of your lotus feet. So that was a verse that related to this particular verse that we read about how happiness is like a water in a ditch. And then here, there's another paragraph. Persons who are not in Krishna consciousness are living a very precarious life, as described in this verse. But all these circumstantial conditions are due to forgetfulness of Krishna. So here Prabhupada's saying what we should do about that. The Krishna consciousness movement is meant to give relief to all those bewildered and distressed persons. Therefore, it is the greatest relief work for all human society. And the workers thereof are the greatest well-wishers, for they follow in the footsteps of Lord Chaitanya, who is the greatest friend to all living entities. So that's our duty. And then we'll close here with another quote from Uddhava, and in the Uddhava Gita. My dear Lord, for one who is being tormented on the terrible path of birth and death and is constantly overwhelmed by the threefold miseries, I do not see any possible shelter other than your two lotus feet, which are just like a refreshing umbrella that pours down showers of delicious nectar. Jai. So we have a few minutes left, and if anyone has any comments or questions or realizations, we have 4 minutes. So, anyway, this is very interesting how we can see two different endeavors, that there is great endeavors. Even though there's austerity in both, Lord Indra is going through some great austerity, and the devotees also. Of course, Lord Indra is a devotee, but here he's acting as he's trying to get his heavenly happiness back. That the material endeavors are more and more dangerous, much more dangerous than the devotees, difficulties that he goes through to attain Krishna consciousness. But we are relieved, just like I think it was King Prithu was given a gift of an umbrella. He had this special umbrella. He was given a gift when they coronated him. And that umbrella would give little drops of nectar, just like a little mist of water, which would keep him cool wherever he went. It was really nice. So we have that same umbrella. It's described here by Uddhava that the two lotus feet of Krishna. And that represents all this knowledge, all these transcendental information we're receiving from the Bhagavatam, hearing and chanting the holy names. All these, is Krishna, his lotus feet. So we always can keep in touch with this cooling, refreshing, mist-giving umbrella to relieve us from these miseries and actually attain real happiness. Jai. So thank you very much for your kind attention. All glories to the Srimad Bhagavatam.